When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax. Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Nolan.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Today's episode is about power. It's often said power corrupts, and, you know, we've all seen that happen one way or another. You might remember a kid who got a little despotic when they became hall monitor, or kept an eye on the class while the teacher was gone. There are no shortages of stories of local politicians who dip their finger into the sugar jar of public coffers. But what happens when the people at the very top reaches of law enforcement start breaking the same laws, the specific same laws they are meant to enforce? That's our story today, the still unfolding tale of Charles McGonigal, Charlie, to his friends. For 22 years, he served the FBI and, according to authorities, he began serving other masters somewhere along the way. Here are the facts.
Yes, we first learned about old Charlie here when we did a quick piece of strange news on him, because I think it's something's been going on for a long time, but it made the news because he was formally being charged with some stuff. Not good stuff.
No, he wasn't charged with being like the dopest guy at the roller skating rink.
Not this time. That was years ago.
That was in his past. It's true. So what was interesting about this case specifically? Charles McGonigal. Not a whole lot of information out there in the public sphere, but we can ascertain some basics. He was born in the late 60s, 1968, based on what we found, in Ohio. And he went to Johns Hopkins, a prestigious university, where he obtained a bachelor's degree in business administration in 1990. It's funny, I always think of Johns Hopkins for their medical school, but they also have, you know, other disciplines represented there, and business is one of them. He got that in 1990. Then in November of 1994, he got married to Pamela Fox McGonigal.
Cool middle name.
Yeah, total Fox.
I like that, right? That's a cool name. But right now, as we record, this guy is not in jail. He's not in prison. As we record on March 3rd, 2023, he is living in Chevy Chase, Maryland. He joined the FBI in 96, and he also continued to pursue his education. In 2012, he got a master's degree also from Johns Hopkins, as you mentioned, Noel. And this might seem weird to people, but it's not super unusual. In a ton of careers, folks will commit themselves to a brutal schedule to pursue higher education because it
it furthers your job prospects, right? And in some reaches of government, there's actually a tiered system of base pay that rises depending on your level of education. So, you know, your schedule sucks for a while, but it is a good investment in your time, especially if you're ambitious. And as we'll come to find, Charlie is nothing if not ambitious.
May I quickly derail us and ask a silly question, chicken or the egg question? What came first, Chevy Chase the actor or Chevy Chase Maryland?
Chevy Chase Maryland.
I do the answer. Okay. Do you think it was Chevy Chase named after the city, or is it just a coincidence? Is the stage name, is Chevy's name actually Chevy, or was that just a nickname as a result of this place, and did he have any association with it?
His real name is Cornelius Crane Chase.
Okay, one would imagine then it was a tip of the hat to old Chevy Chase Maryland. Sorry. It's funny, I only first found out about Chevy Chase Maryland from Fallout 2, the one that takes place in the D.C. area, and I thought it was made up. I thought it was some kind of jokey reference to Chevy Chase the actor, but not the case, if any of you fellow conspiracy realists were wondering the same thing.
Yeah, it's a real place, and as our pal Paul just said, I don't know if you'll put that in the air, Paul, but Paul pointed out that Chevy Chase, Maryland, is a pretty prestigious and wealthy area of Maryland. So this guy is living in a good neighborhood as we speak. He, in his career, over 22 years, he went on to serve in various parts of the FBI. He was always moving up, New York, Cleveland, D.C., Baltimore. In 2016, there was quite a coup toward the end of his career. He was named the special agent in charge of the counterintelligence division for the New York field office. Yes, again, we know only an outfit like the U.S. government would make a word like counterintelligence and take it seriously without realizing that if you don't know what they do, it sounds like they're the dumb squad. They're very much not. They're very much not. They're not dumb people.
Well, let's talk about what counterintelligence means for the FBI. So we've talked a lot in the past about how the CIA is the intelligence part of the United States that operates outside of the U.S. So they're the ones that actually put out feelers and will go into another country, conduct intelligence in that country, or, you know, whether that is intelligence or counterintelligence in that country. The FBI handles all the stuff that happens inside the territory. So FBI counterintelligence is basically keeping a lookout for any other spies that may come into the U.S., either with diplomatic cover. That's often what happens, especially in New York because of the UN. And they just try and see, oh, is that diplomat actually a diplomat, or is that some KGB agent or something like that?
But like the etymology of the term intelligence even is a little veiled, right? Because, I mean, intelligence, you know, in the way we know it, Webster's wise, means, you know, smarts, means the ability to ascertain information and some level of deductive reasoning power. But in this case, intelligence refers to gathering information. Right. So there's a connection, but counterintelligence is sort of like an oppositional, equal and opposite reaction to those gathering intelligence on you. Right.
You just got to take it literally. They're countering the intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is, I guess the way I would put it for an analogy is the FBI and a counterintelligence capability is largely the goalie of a big, big soccer game. And the field is the rest of the world. So they're trying to keep the balls from getting into the net that is U.S. activity.
Because the net has all the important stuff in it.
Right, but this net also bites back because part of a counterintelligence operation, even though it's largely defensive, part of it is the ability to not just identify foreign actors, but potentially turn them toward your own purposes. Everybody does this. It's a glass planet. There are no real quote unquote good guys, but there are rules. And that's where Charlie goes wrong. So he works on some high level, high sensitivity stuff, the kind of thing that you don't hear about until it's sewn up, right? Until the DOJ is pretty much happy and thinks they have a case. So for 2 years, he's a big wheel in the New York field office. He's in charge of counterintelligence in one of the most sensitive intelligence areas in the country. When he retires, he's got a great distinguished career. Like a lot of people with his level of expertise, he goes to the private sector. Again, this is neither illegal nor necessarily unusual. We see this
where you make more money.
Right. You make more money. We see it as a natural progression of careers. Now, is it a good thing that that revolving door exists? I would say no, but it is definitely a door that people use often.
We should point out that he retired in 2018, just so he only spent around two years as that special agent in charge of counterintelligence.
Right, right. And that was a culmination of his career. And let's take a second to say, you know, first, he was very successful. He ended up involved with a lot of high-profile cases, some of which we reported on in this show in the past. WikiLeaks. Let's see, he busted. There were some stories that were really big at the time that a lot of people forgot about. Like he busted the Clinton administration's national security advisor, Sandy Berger, for stealing classified documents. And then this is very, he did like spy movie stuff. Like he led the search for a Chinese mole inside the CIA. He was doing his job. And he could be really great to work with if he considered you a peer or a superior. He knew when to lay on the butter, but he was also kind of, a lot of colleagues we found quoted anonymously said he was kind of a jerk if he thought you were working for him.
Which tracks.
It makes me biased because I have no respect for people like that. Absolutely. If you can't be nice to a waiter, then you're not worth my time. Mm-mm.
I feel the exact same way. Yeah, and you can really tell a lot about a person's character by how they treat those working under them. Because, we all three of us have managed people and headed up teams. And I think we all, every single step of the way, try to be self-aware and treat people with respect. And that's also how you get the best work out of people, not even as a flex or as some sort of manipulation. It's just facts. And typically, if you treat people like crap, they're going to rebel against you, whether outwardly or, you know, under the table, kind of.
The way he's described reminds me a lot of that fairly new television show called The Recruit that's based around an FBI agent who's really an attorney, but functioning as an agent. And it reminds me of the way the FBI in general is described, the work atmosphere at that outfit, basically of that resenting successes of other people, making sure that you're the one who gets the credit if somebody under you, you know, does something. And again, it's just a fictionalized television show, but it really reminds me of the way it's depicted in it.
Yeah. Yeah, and let's talk about those descriptions. So one former colleague, a lot of these colleagues are very careful to be anonymous because of the way making public statements works. One colleague said that McGonagall was, quote, an egotistical narcissist who frequently screamed at subordinates and resented the success of others, another unfortunately common thing in many industries. And what is more, I mean, this is more dangerous, though, because this is the FBI. They also say that McGonagall seemed to have or could have used his professional influence to further his political ideology, which is something you're not supposed to do in the FBI, in case anyone was wondering. There's a great article at a place called Spy Talk by Jeff Stein, who points out that McGonagall is suspected of being part of this unofficial clique in the FBI New York office, who wanted to prevent Hillary Clinton from winning the 2016 presidential election, and that he was probably part of this group that pressured the FBI director, James Comey, to investigate, you know, the Clinton emails just a few days before the election officially kicked off.
Which was a huge deal. Not only the fact of what it was, but also that it was happening at that time. I remember how much that affected my thinking in 2016.
Yeah. And at the same time, you know, obviously there were other forces out who wanted to influence the election in an undue way, Russia being the primary, right? And then there's still questions about WikiLeaks and how they decided to release what they did and when. But anyhow, let's stay with spy talk, because once some of these sources get the badge of anonymity, they're way more open about, they say stuff they wouldn't say with their names attached. Kind of like on the internet. This guy is describing Charlie and says his peers thought highly of him and his managers did, but a lot of people that worked for him couldn't stand him because he was such a dickhead. He just treated people really bad.
Jeez.
This is not us saying it. We've never worked with Charlie McGonagall. But he was successful. He went private industry. He becomes a vice president at a place called Brookfield Properties, which is a big deal real estate company. And just last year, in 2022, I think, he was hired as the global head of security for a place called Aman Resorts, A-M-A-N. Very, very
is
weird
it Aman?
Company. Aman, I believe, yeah. But I may be mispronouncing. This place is controversial because of some murky links to a Russian, a guy who's a big deal in Russia, who is not Putin.
An oligarch, you may say.
You might, some might. And, right. But there's always more to this story, right? So somewhere along the way, members of the counterintelligence community, which is very, very close-knit, they started to question his allegiance. And this story dropped for us in like 2022, but there was something in the wind by 2018.
So as far back, as you said, Ben, as 2018, the British were keeping some tabs on McGonagall and noticed that he was taking some very suspicious meetings with a Russian national. Which is a bit of a red flag considering the circumstances, even as far back. I mean, we've always been a little tenuous with the Russians, I suppose, you know, as far back as the Cold War and the Iron Curtain. So there's always a little bit of suspicion that comes into play when there are secret meetings happening with Russian nationals. And in January of 2023, Charles McGonagall was arrested. This is just a couple of years later after the observation of this meeting on charges of money laundering, making false statements in mandatory disclosures to the FBI, violating U.S. sanctions on Russia, because those are still ironclad, and more.
Yeah, and we should mention here, Ben talked about the glass world where everybody's doing this kind of counterintelligence. It just should be noted that the British intelligence was checking out the Russian person whom McGonagall was meeting. And that's how it happened. And we talk a lot about Five Eyes and things like that, where there's a lot of intelligence sharing. Not all of the intelligence, mind you, never all of the intelligence, but quite a bit is shared between a lot of these Western countries. And I'm assuming that's kind of what happened here. There's back channeling to the FBI after they notice. That's a little weird.
Oh, boy, I'm frightfully afraid there may be a fox in the hen house in it.
Frightfully afraid. I love it. So, extra.
Yeah, the FBI believed the British. They claimed there was a traitor in their midst. So what happened? We'll tell you after a word from our sponsor. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. on demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
And we're back. That was hopefully Aman Resorts. Here's where it gets crazy. As much as this sounds like something out of a movie, it looked to be the case that McGonagall had been turned. He has not been convicted yet. That's very important to say. We'll probably say it a couple times in this episode. But the authorities, pretty much all of them, DOJ, FBI, you name it, they seem pretty convinced this guy was a spy or at the very least corrupt.
And had that super important intelligence information in his head or had access to it potentially, you know, by means of a hard drive or a piece of paper and that kind of thing. And he could be sharing that stuff.
Right. And let's take a moment to say, okay, something that spy movies get wrong, like works of fiction always get wrong, is this. And it's kind of a disappointing thing. It's not great for movies, but intelligence, especially high level or secret intelligence, is often what we would call perishable. It has a short shelf life, you know, like stuff from the organic aisle of the grocery store.
So in other words, just a window in which it is useful. And then outside of that, it is basically not.
Yeah, correct. And so this, this means that there's another kind of resource people like this can offer, and that is connections. That's influence. Connections are not necessarily perishable. They can be burned, just like a persona. So we don't, like, we'll get into it. We'll get into what he was trading back and forth, but it seems to be a little bit more like connections and intros and influence than it does to be actionable intelligence on the ground stuff. But his professional life definitely made him aware of tradecraft in a way that many average people would never know. You wouldn't know what to ask. He ran 150 FBI agents in New York, and they were tasked with, remember we said the net bites back, they were tasked with shadowing foreign operatives the way the British were following this Russian contact, and then turning those folks, if they could, into spies for the U.S. Now, this doesn't mean they're getting someone from like the Russian embassy and saying, hey, we know you're not the IT guy, and now you work for us. It could be something as seemingly innocuous as, we know you work at this consulting firm, right? And we think you have a side gig, and we want to give you another one. Or it could be, we know that you are, yes, going to an academic conference here, or you're, you know, selling Turkish rugs or whatever, but we also know about those other meetings you had at the Dunkin' Donuts.
Well, access is the name of the game here, right? I mean, access to individuals, relationships, you know, with folks that you can kind of blend in with and get information, whether it's nefarious in terms of the knowledge of that person, whether it's just you're kind of got your ears open, you know, and you're, you know, working in these circles. So when they can identify someone that maybe is willing to play ball, who has that kind of access, ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. You know, hope you had a great time at the conference. Why don't you, when you get back to Turkey, you know, why don't you just let us know if any of your colleagues are making breakthroughs in things we would find of interest, right?
Yes, like of interest, wink, wink, nudge,
right,
nudge.
Like, no, you know, more. And they're talking to a young nuclear scientist or something. So this means McGonagall knows about this kind of stuff. He's aware of it, and he's the top dog. He's got the catbird seat. Most people only think about this kind of world or industry when you watch cool spy movies, you know, the James Bond stuff, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which is great. It holds up. So this guy, if he does get convicted, it's kind of like he's some dude who worked at a bank for years and years and years before deciding to rob it. So he knows how the bank works already, which means, and this is the thing that keeps tripping me up, this means that he should have, by all logic and reason, he should have had a better than average likelihood of conspiring successfully and getting away with it. That's what makes 2018 even more confusing. Like we said, the British clocked it first. He meets a Russian in London. Apparently, despite the fact that this is the same year he retired from the FBI, he did not know this contact was already being surveilled by the Brits. Like you said, Matt, they'll share intelligence, but never all of it. And this
something small like that. Okay, but, you know, this known Russian person we've been watching is in London right now. We're watching that person. There's no reason to share that information with, you know, with the United States, the location and activities of an oligarch in your country. Like, that doesn't make, you know, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But when one of your former operatives or former, you know, heads of an intelligence agency is meeting with your target, yeah, you're going to take note.
One anonymous source, again, these guys kind of loosen their ties when they're anonymous. One anonymous source would later remark, what the f*** was he thinking? Because years of experience,
how much is coffee sprayed?
Years of experience running counterintelligence ops means that McGonagall should have known this London encounter would attract notice. London, like New York, is highly surveilled in this world because there are so many centers of finance and, you know, halls of state power there. And look, you know, this guy lives in the United States. He lives in a nice neighborhood, but he lives in a country separated by two huge oceans. You don't just, the idea that you would travel across the Atlantic for a meeting or series of meetings implies that it was more than just an accidental run-in, you know, or a casual acquaintance. Like, oh, Oleg, fancy seeing you here. I'm only saying that because I have a pretty good Russian friend whose name is Oleg. So,
oh wow!
So that's a shout out to you, bud.
Uh-oh. Oh,
no, he's not an oligarch.
Okay, he's not an oligarch. So
he does live in London, though. Now that I think about it, I sure should text him.
Yeah, don't meet in a park or something. look, do you think he used his cell phone to arrange that? Probably not his personal cell phone,
like,
right?
A burner or some kind burners of encrypted guy. Yeah.
That's burners. What I was alluding to.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't just make a phone call to your buddy who happens to be an oligarch and go meet him if you're former head of FBI counterintelligence.
We don't know who the Russian contact was yet, but I'm guessing it probably would have been an agent of an oligarch, mm-hmm, or an interest, you know?
The one we're going to talk about here in a minute.
Yeah, a handler or fixer for a bigger cat. But this means, like, these sources are saying, okay, this meeting just doesn't just happen. So in our mind, based on the knowledge we have as the FBI, this means that we probably stumbled upon an extended relationship, that this was not their first contact. And McGonagall, by that logic, had probably been in contact before he retired from the FBI. We don't know the exact month he retired in 2018, but we do know this meeting in London happened in 2018. So it may have even been a case where, you know, he gets out and he says, ho, buddy, don't worry, I got out, you know, I'm a free man, right? I'm open to other opportunities.
Yeah, but the British were like, oh, wait, isn't there an embassy, like, right around the corner? Maybe we should tell the U.S. guys this happened. So that's what they do, right?
Yeah. They go to the attaché at the U.S. embassy, and they're like, look, we know Fred is not really the IT guy and we need to talk to him. I'm kidding. The FBI, I think, is pretty public with their legal attaché and stuff. They don't need to be all skullduggery-ish about it. But yeah, the FBI said, okay, we believe you, and thanks for telling us. We're going to open an investigation into McGonagall. And in 2021, just a few years back, U.S. attorneys conspired. They secretly got a grand jury together to look at the evidence. And the Justice Department had to admit that a grand jury was happening, but they refused to say what the grand jury was investigating or whether it remained ongoing, which is a brilliant psych. I mean, they have to, but it's also brilliant from a PSYOP standpoint, because if you have done anything that you're worried about and you just hear there's a grand jury doing something, you know what I mean?
Just make that announcement and watch everybody.
Right. Open your safe of fake passports and get your bag of loose diamonds out.
I was about to say. Love it. Or your like coffee can if you're Better Call Saul.
Mm, yes. Yeah.
Whatever it is. It's like a, you know, one of those cookie tins that everyone keeps like sewing stuff in.
You know, I saw one of those with cookies in it one time and it blew my mind.
Those are good cookies, man. Those shortbread cookies.
Yeah, pretty good.
You like those?
I like them. I like them all right. I mean, I'm not a very sweet
person.
You're not a
cookie guy. Yeah.
Nah. Pretty sure those cookies had PCP in them.
Cool.
You don't put them in there unless they got some, unless they're wet.
They come in there.
Wet cookies?
They come in their own little tiny dainty little cup, you know?
Coffee paper cup. That's so the PCP doesn't leak out.
Let's go.
All right.
Let's do a ride along. King Kong ain't got nothing on Matt.
Right. So, Matt's childhood PCP experiences aside,
this is why you are the way you are.
Which is awesome. Which is awesome. This is not us condoning smoking wet, but let us know about your experiences.
We should cut all of that out, you guys. No, I'm so sorry.
No, it's funny.
Let's keep it. Let's keep in the part where we say let's keep it. So here's how we know about this earlier. Business Insider, which has done a series of great reports on this, they managed to obtain a witness subpoena that shed light on what they were doing. And at the time, the subpoena was asking this witness for records about McGonagall's interaction with a consulting firm, and consulting firms can be very shady, called Spectrum Risk Solutions.
Yeah, the more innocuous the name, the more shady the dealings.
And we should say it's security. Like, it's based in security. So, right?
Right.
You have a former FBI agent who has a lot of security experience who's now moving into the private sector. And then that thing, like, what is that entity doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because security, like consulting, can also mean many, many different things. But on the, if we didn't look past the surface, it makes sense. If you're a private firm, you want to hire somebody with experience, right? And they have experience in one of the best intelligence, counterintelligence operations on the planet. So this is a good get for you. But it turns out that Spectrum was probably doing some shady proxy stuff to help with some introductions that we don't have to get into, but we do know they involved operatives of a guy we're about to meet, Oleg Deripaska. Not my pal Oleg, different dude, much older than my pal. But
not to be confused with Olaf, the delightful singing snowman from the Frozen film franchise.
Absolutely not. That guy is Pakistan intelligence through and through. Everybody knows he's with ISI. But I'm saying, rewatch it. Okay, so.
It's there. All the clues are there.
It's there if you look for it. So McGonagall, let's talk about the charges. All right, what's he actually charged with? And again, he hasn't been convicted.
So McGonagall was actually charged in two separate corruption cases involving illegal cash receipts and money laundering. The first for allegedly taking secret payments of more than $225,000 from a former Albanian intelligence agent on behalf of a political party there. He also apparently kept a framed photo of him with Albanian Prime Minister Edi Rama. I'm laughing because it's just, that's a weird thing to do in general. You know, you got to really stand for somebody if you're walking around with a framed photo of you and them, like that's not a member of your family. It's sort of like those people that have pictures of them and like George Bush on their mantle. But this is even a step further than that, isn't
right.
it?
Right. Yeah. I want to put this part in because it's... It seems to indicate that he was, like you said, proud of the relationship and also wasn't worried about people knowing that. This is his home office, by the way, in the same room. He's got a framed photo of him with a guy named Ramush Haradinaj, who was a former prime minister of Kosovo. This starts to get international real quick. We also know in 2018, he had access to a secret list of Russian oligarchs that Uncle Sam was going to sanction for their ties to the Kremlin, their ties to Putin.
When he was keeping an eye, like his group was keeping an eye specifically on those oligarchs. Where's their right. money? Where, how is it being spent right now and moved around? And then he ends up being accused of trying to get this one particular oligarch, Deripaska, removed from that potential list. Right?
Right. The mongoose appears to have befriended the snake it was supposed to hunt. That second charge is just as you described it, Matt. There's this Russian oligarch, Oleg Deripaska, and apparently McGonagall and he worked out some kind of arrangement where he was going to try to get Deripaska off of U.S. sanctions, which is a big, big deal because he has access to a lot of money from his side of the fence. And if he can play ball in the U.S., then he can move that money very easily and make it dance for him in all kinds of ways.
Dance for me, money!
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he was paid monthly, right? He was like employed.
On a payroll. Yeah. He had W-9s, you know? I mean, this is...
Well, I don't know about
no,
that.
No, he definitely did not have anything of the sort.
But yeah, he was paid $25,000 a month for work that he was doing here.
Which is great money. $25,000. That should give everybody kind of a glimpse into what the capital the oligarchs are capable of spending easily, you know. Now it's not House of Saud level, but it's big. You know, this is the kind of thing where in the mind of the oligarch, you go, what's the smallest amount of money that would seem like a huge money to one of these law peasants?
Yeah, about 25 G's a month.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but what account is it going to come from?
Ah, that's where you get careful, right? Because in addition to that 25 grand you're ponying up, you also have to pay for the support structure to keep it from looking like you're openly cutting this guy a check every month. So this goes through an account held by a former Russian diplomat who worked as an interpreter for the U.S. government. His name, Sergei Shestakov. Not made up. That's his real name.
And one would assume that, you know, these types of folks are vetted pretty heavily if they're former Russian officials or Russian, would you consider a diplomat, not an operative, but still people within the Russian government, if they're coming to work for us, you would assume that they're being paid pretty close attention to in terms of their background and their allegiances and all of that, right?
Yeah, yeah. The bar is pretty high. The background checks are quite extensive. You know, the net is pretty tight there. And because these folks are professionals, right? They're not amateurs. And the one of the big issues that's happened in recent years is that the U.S. government has challenges getting people who are fluent in certain high value languages. Like it's tough to find those people, so they are prioritized.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about Darius Pasca. He and McGonagall, this is very cinematic. They have been aware of each other for years. Like the FBI, as far back as 2014, tried to recruit our pal Oleg as an informant. Because, of course, he's high value.
Well, yeah, let's talk about why he's high value. Yeah. Okay,
sure.
This dude, this oligarch, Oleg, was the richest person in Russia in 2008. The richest person in Russia in 2008.
Whoa.
And then what happened in 2008, 2009, guys? Huge crash in the United States, huge global economy crash. He ended up losing a ton of money, had a bunch of debt, and his net worth right now is around just under $3 billion. But he was the richest person in Russia in 2008. And you can imagine then, after losing a ton of that money, by the time you get to 2014, he's made all the connections as the former richest person in Russia, right? And he's moving in all the circles.
Now I shall exploit them.
Yeah, he's in a much more vulnerable place than he had been in a long time, probably. You can imagine he was a target.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was reading it the other way. I was looking at it like he lost all that money. He had all these connections from back when he was super rich. So now he was going to exploit those connections. But it's the other way around to what we were saying earlier. That access that he had was seen as like red meat for those who would seek to exploit him.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The FBI wanted him, right?
Yeah. No, I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The FBI, of course you would want. This guy's the belle of the ball, intelligence-wise. You know what I mean?
It's like that Uncle Sam poster. We want you, except it's a dude in a suit with some glasses.
And it just, I'm sorry to just keep harping on this, guys, but he's involved in so many industries within Russia that if you think about the actions Russia took with the Crimean Peninsula, you know, for shipping, for getting goods in and out of Russia and out of that whole area, basically, he was in... how do they describe it at Forbes? Aluminum, like utilities, energy, construction, agriculture. He was in all the stuff.
All the things. Agriculture, am I right?
There we go. Also, two important points. I'm hesitant sometimes with the use of oligarchs to describe these Russian actors. They are tentacles of the state, but also it seems to imply that there aren't oligarchs running the United States, and that's very
that's right.
much the case.
Yeah, I always get a little confused about the term. I mean, officially, it is a small group of very wealthy individuals that kind of run a state in a sort of shadowy way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because they've got the power of the purse, essentially. Like their money talks, and they are influencing government. But no, what are corporations, you know, in America? You know, what are like super, super wealthy campaign donors?
Why are so many people, why are so many of the same people on the top board of directors across all these companies?
And that revolving door you were talking about, Ben, you know, folks going from, you know, these positions of government power to private industry and then becoming the top dogs there, and then they have those connections. I mean, this is a topic for another day, but I agree. I think the term oligarch, especially in terms of using to describe other countries, it's like, this is something that happens in other countries.
So,
but
yeah,
that's so the, not true.
Yeah, that's the point I'm making. Here's the second point, or just real quick so I can set this up. Oleg is in trouble in Russia as well now. A year ago, he called for peace in Ukraine. He said destroying Ukraine would be a huge mistake. And a few months after that, Russian authorities started seizing some of his assets, including a hotel complex he owns in Sochi.
Oh, that's right. That was a retribution kind of almost, wasn't it?
Well, again, when we do a series on oligarchs, it's probably this guy's his own episode, but.
But
yes.
I think the only reason why I'm okay with describing Oleg as an oligarch is because he is one of these guys that got his business roots are at the collapse of the Soviet Union. So
right,
he's one
at
of
the
these
privatization.
Guys. He's one of the guys that swooped in with private money, bought up all of the state run stuff that was state run at the time, and then just made billions and billions of dollars.
For the equivalent of pennies on the dollar. Yeah. And McGonagall had investigated multiple Russian operatives earlier in his career. It's currently unclear whether he was involved with the effort to recruit Deripaska. But here's the thing. If you've ever worked anywhere, you tend to have some idea of your colleagues' projects. Unless you're in like the Puzzle Palace, you might not be actively involved in something, but you know what they do, right? You're not up to the day-to-day of the accounting or like the folks who are, I don't know, involved in some new initiative, but you know they're doing something. You roughly know what. Before his retirement in 2018, McGonagall had moved to the point where he was directly in charge of investigating Oleg. And this guy, like you said, man, he already been implicated in so many criminal acts over the years, including Russian attempts to sway the U.S. election, the same election that, according to some anonymous sources, McGonagall may have also tried to sway. The press caught on. They began reporting on this, and they uncovered a lot of firsthand accounts from anonymous former colleagues. But then also they found account messy personal life stuff. Like, it looked like Oleg and Charlie had started helping each other out kind of on a personal as well as professional level. Like, Charlie was helping Oleg's daughter with some stuff. It was very important to Oleg that she get to the U.S. to give birth so that her child would have U.S. papers that were clean. And it seems like Charlie was also stepping out on his wife, who he described as his ex-wife. They seem to have been estranged for a bit. And this is just reporting. This is not us personally saying this. So we had an extramarital relationship, a girlfriend on the side, Allison Guerriero, from about spring of 2017 to 2018. Yes, relationships can always be tough. Affairs are not ethically sound, but adultery is not a crime in Maryland. Still, this tells us more about the case. What do we mean? We'll tell you after a word from our sponsors. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
And we we've returned. You know, Matt, it occurs to me that this next part of the story, if someone makes a movie on this, this is going to be the part they focus on way too much, because screenwriters and TV writers are always like, oh, let's talk about the emotional aspects of the thing. Let's have everybody use their names way too often in a scene.
Well, yeah, the B storyline is it's often what gets you through to the next important plot point. Yeah, I mean, it's functional.
You're right. I sound cold. I'm sorry. I think it's okay for people to have emotions. That's not fair of me.
Whatever.
So, okay. These guys both have they don't have perfect personal lives. Who does? The thing is, it would not have necessarily been illegal for Charlie McGonagall to work for Oleg Deripaska, right?
No, I mean, if he truly left his post at the FBI and just started up, you know, a new position somewhere, utilizing the things he'd learned in his position, not necessarily any of the secrets, but the skills, then I guess that's okay. We do know you never really leave an intelligence agency when you retire. Not really. Kinda. Mostly, but not really.
I mean, yeah, I guess it depends on, because these are big, big operations, right? So I guess it depends on what you do. But if you're like a special agent in charge, it does seem like those relationships and influences would follow you after you leave. And even people who go through the debriefing process still, I'm confident they can still make some calls and things like that. I don't think it's, I don't know if we want to paint a huge broad brush and say that everybody is still active when they leave. Some people are still just, you know, going fishing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't mean to say you're always active even when you retire. What I mean is like part of the journey stays with you. You know what I mean? I don't know what I'm saying. But ultimately you have a tie to the FBI now, no matter what, even if you're retired, right? And it's known that you have that information, you know, it's known that you're aware of the methods. That's probably one of the most important things.
Yeah, so, agreed.
If you're going to go into a relationship like this with an oligarch, you basically would just have to inform everybody and be upfront about it. Hey, guys, just want to let you know, I'm doing my thing over here now with Oleg. You know, you check it out if you need to. Totally fine. Buff board. But that's not what happened.
Do you think they had nicknames for each other?
Oh,
was
yeah.
Was he calling him like the leg man or something? That's a cool nickname.
Sure. Yes,
the leg man.
It was probably just like Chuck and Greg or something real simple.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. Their conversations may not have been as fun as ours. But yeah, the Foreign Agents Registration Act, it's an old law, and it's one of those laws that is still in effect. It requires anybody who is operating for a foreign government organization or just a VIP of some sort to disclose their relationship to the Department of Justice. And part of this, I mean, it doesn't ban any specific activities, but it's kind of like a let us know, loop us in, so we understand what's going on. And if you don't do that, then you can get hit with a $250,000 fine and up to 5 years in prison. There's a report, again, from Business Insider, did some excellent work here, that shows McGonagall's girlfriend kind of always knew something was up. She knew, like, he was lying to her about the state of his previous relationship. You know, he said he loved his kids, but he has a soon-to-be ex-wife, and they're definitely going to get divorced. And they've been, per her, he's saying that, you know, the marriage is over, and it's just almost a matter of paperwork. And he goes back home to Maryland once or twice a month, but he has an apartment in Park Slope in New York. And one day in October 2017, I think it is, she's hanging out at his apartment, and she sees a literal bag of cash on the floor, bundles and bundles of big denominations wrapped up in rubber bands. And she's like, Charlie, what? What's going on? And he says, oh, I won a bet on a baseball game.
Dang, Charlie.
I know, okay. Man.
Wow.
Duffel bag bets. All right.
Yeah. Should do that more often. Jeez Louise. Yeah. Yeah. I guess the girlfriend, his girlfriend at the time really just kind of believed what she was being sold. And he was definitely not being upfront about really anything there. And I don't know. I guess you just kind of move on and go, all right, well, I guess that's his baseball money. Let's go see that movie.
Charlie's baseball money. Yeah. She had also had relationships in the past with people who are in law enforcement. You can find a picture of her with Giuliani, by the way, Rudy Giuliani. And yeah, and she said, you know, sometimes I just didn't ask questions. I knew Charlie lived large. He would take her to really posh, nice restaurants. He would give her gifts of large amounts of cash for her birthday, like $500,000. He said he would frame his divorce papers for her as a present. He would take her to private box games to watch the New Jersey Devils. It's a hockey team there. And then she recalls stuff like one time he just gave somebody on the street $100, like a guy's wow. panhandling. And he said, well, I'm better off than he is. I'm going to try to help him because I'm in a better place. And then she also said she contracted cancer. She battled cancer for a while. And she said during that time, he was very loving and caring, and he would send agents to drive her back and forth from treatment in government vehicles. He's kind of playing fast and loose with the company property at that point.
Yeah, that's pretty nuts. So McGonagall and his girlfriend were living it up. They were doing some great things. I mean, come on. Hanging out, watching the New Jersey Devils in a box? That's cool. That's fun. But his girlfriend said, quote, he needed to make more money. He had two kids to put through college. And, it was a whole other family, his wife, too. He needed to make more money is the big deal here.
Yeah. It's never enough, right? We all know the game.
You're living in Park Slope, for God's sakes, in an apartment. Come on. That's an expensive area. And that's your second place or third.
That's your second place. Yeah. In the world of counterintelligence, you know, any little crack in someone's personal life can, should, and will be used as leverage if needed. So that means Matt threw up the devil horns there. That means that any compromising personal information can and will be used against someone. And infidelity is just as valuable to those sorts of operatives as crushing debt. It's a way in. But it doesn't seem in this case that adultery was the prime factor in his turning. It seems he sold himself for different reasons. And again, if there is a conviction that follows, if Uncle Sam is able to prove this conspiracy, it honestly looks like he sold himself kind of cheap. Because when he was private industry, sources report he was pulling something like $300,000 to $350,000 a year, not counting annual bonuses. And I get it, college costs are increasing. But that's a fair amount of money, I would imagine.
It's a lot of money. Kidding me? That's a lot of money.
It's quite a bit of money. And so before we start sounding like a Seinfeld episode or Curb Your Enthusiasm, it's a lot of money. He apparently needed more. And remember, I think earlier, Matt, you mentioned it was $225,000 that he had received. In the high-level world of tradecraft and consulting firms and oligarchs, that's peanuts. I mean, if you do the cost-benefit analysis, well, we say even just the Foreign Registration Act, getting popped on that one is a $250,000 fine. You know, take a lesson from the banks. Make sure that if you are convicted of a crime, the fine for that is less than the money you made doing the crime.
Hey, so you always come out on top.
So you always come out on top. And shout out, Mac, Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I mean, that's the thing. All right. The current status, Charles McGonagall has not been convicted. There has not been a trial. So a lot of what we're exploring here is just what has been said in the public sphere. It's quite possible that there is information on the defense side and the prosecutor's side that will only later come to light, and it may change the conversation. He made bail. He paid a $500,000 bond. He is, to all accounts, he is currently residing there in Maryland.
I don't know. Chevy Chase, not in Chevy Park Chase. Slope, New York, or no. Whatever. Is that Brooklyn? I think that is Brooklyn.
Yeah. It's Brooklyn. And I got to ask, do you think he'll be convicted?
I don't know.
I think on some charges, at least.
There's fishy stuff, but it's also so highly sensitive. I wonder how much.
Oh, right. How much could be in open court?
Yeah.
Ah, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I personally think right now it is likely that he'll be convicted on at least some charges, but this is only a chapter in a much larger story of conspiracy. As we're recording today, it is certain that multiple government agents are being targeted for turning operations. Hopefully none of them will be successful. The McGonagall case is extraordinarily rare, but the conspiracies continue. We only know about the ones who get caught. Of course, foreign powers want people on the inside of their rivals' operations, and why not? I mean, don't forget, folks, especially if you live in America, around the planet, in every country you can imagine, right now, the United States wants the same. It's how the game is played.
Woo! So, woo. Happy...
But, you know, let's do our little podcast.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about it. Yeah. Oh, God. So what do you think? Is this just a case of a former spy going out and trying to make some cash in, you know, a way that he understands how to do it? Or is it some kind of tricksy thing going on in the background between the U.S. and Russian powers? I don't know if we saw this, Ben, but there was a March 2017 report connecting this same guy, Deripaska, Oleg, to Paul Manafort, the guy who was running Trump's campaign. And allegedly, Paul Manafort was getting paid a lot of money on a multi-year contract to specifically promote Russia and the things that Russia wanted.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He had a contract with Deripaska.
Deripaska also sued Manafort.
He did. He did. There's a connection to Christopher Steele from the Steele dossier, you know, the PP dossier. Mm-hmm. There's some weird stuff going on with that oligarch, the guy who is known as an oligarch.
Yeah. Which oligarchs should we look into? Let us know. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Again, this is an unfolding case, but it's a window through which we can view a world that doesn't often get explored. We want to hear your thoughts. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok until the U.S. takes that down. Would love it if you check out our YouTube show. You can see, no, not too many spoilers, but you can see Matt and I getting back to our roots there in a way that I think we both really enjoy.
Like our roots, dancing way too much.
And if you don't sip the social meads, as always, we've got your back. Fellow conspiracy realists, you can call us directly.
Dial 1-833-STDWYTK. It's a voicemail system. Give yourself a cool nickname. We don't care what it is. Don't use your real name. Come on. We've learned more than this. Don't use your real name. Say whatever you'd like. At some point, tell us if we can use your name and message on the air. If you've got more to say than can fit in that 3 minutes, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax. Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.